Daruba Bin Wahad was a political prisoner in the U.S. for 19 years, 7 of those years in solitary confinement. In 1990, he was cleared of all charges when a New York judge found that U.S. federal agents had fabricated evidence against him as part of the Counterintelligence Program, or COINTELPRO, created by the U.S. government to systematically attack and destroy movements for Black, Latino, and Native American liberation. Today, Bin Wahad is in Amman, Jordan, after Israeli authorities denied him entry into the West Bank earlier this week. Along with Washington, D.C.-based independent journalist Naji Mujahid, Bin Wahad was detained at the Allenby Bridge that crosses the River Jordan and marks the main border terminal between Jordan and the West Bank. Contrary to past signed agreements, Israeli forces control the border terminal and regularly detain, interrogate, and deny entry to international visitors who they deem a security risk based on racial, ethnic, religious, and psychological profiling. In this case, Israeli authorities arbitrarily detained the two men for over 11 hours before refusing them entry and forcing them to return to Jordan where their flight had landed. The two U.S. citizens had never been to the Palestinian territories before and were on their way to attend a conference in Jericho, convened by the Palestinian Authority on the status of political detainees in Israel. I managed to speak with Naji Mujahid and Daruba Bin Wahad from their hotel room in Jordan in a conversation which ranged from their own grueling interrogation by Israeli authorities to the recent murder of a Michigan imam, or mosque leader, by the Joint Anti-Terrorism Task Force, to the historical conditions of colonialism that continue to plague places around the world, from the U.S. to Africa to Israel. I'd like to lead into the interview with a song by Oakland-based rapper Iron Sheik, which seems especially appropriate to this particular situation.
The song's dedicated to my friend Yed, and to every other Palestinian who's been turned away. You don't want to see the Palestinians return home up to their families. Check it out.
I gotta catch my flight 241. JFK in New York to Ben Gurion in Tel Aviv. It's taking off soon, so I better leave. Back to see the fam when the land that formed who I am. I get to the airplane, take a stand, show them my passport. Yes, thank you, ma'am. I take my bag in hand and scram when she says, "Excuse me, Mr. Yo Man, we need to search you and make sure you're not a dangerous man." I think to myself, damn, I'm not even there and they're already acting tyrannical, treating me as if I were an animal. They're the ones who stole our son, yet they treating me with suspicion. I follow them into a room. They better hurry up though, cause my flight leaves real soon. They open my bag right in front of me, pulling out my boxes, which they think are funny. They ask me 1 million questions about every item. At first I'm patient, but now I just wanna fight them. Look, I got my underwear, it came up. Why do you wanna keep me and my family apart? It's bad enough they took our days and our nights. For God's sake though, let me onto this flight. Get out my way, leave me alone. Who the hell are you to keep me from my home? Mind your own business, get out of my face. Stop acting like God gave you the place.
This is Jenka Soderberg. I am joined on the line now by Naji Mujahid and Daruba Bin Wahad, who are currently in Jordan after having been denied entry into the West Bank at the Allenby Bridge border. And I wonder, Naji, if you could just start by describing what happened at the border when you tried to enter.
Okay, well, first of all, when we arrived there on the bus, we were, as soon as we got off the bus, we were immediately singled out by the Israeli Defense Force security military guy. And it was a bus full of people, and this was before he had any idea who we were, our history, our reasons for being there. He just, you know, we believe saw two black men exit the bus and singled us out. So he was carrying a large weapon. I'm not exactly sure what it was. And he demanded that we give him our cell phones. And, you know, when we went to do that, he was very cautious about letting us get too close. He confiscated our cell phones, and they ran us through the metal detector. They then took the other devices I had, my cameras and so forth, and they immediately separated us from each other so that we couldn't speak with each other. And they took turns questioning us, and then they strip searched us and sent us to another part of the facility, still had us separated, and we sat there for a while. And then they, and when they began to question us, it was, you know, frivolous stuff for the most part, in addition to the what you would expect, you know, who are you, why are you here, where are you going. You know, they got into, you know, a lot of personal stuff, how long have you known each other, asking me about my family and things of that nature. So then they had our bags searched. They completely unpacked our bags, went through all of our stuff. Even Daruba had some canned sardines. They opened his sardines up and went through everything and took our electronic stuff, our laptops, our cameras, our phones, took that somewhere else, and they had that stuff for a while, presumably going through it. After they unpacked our stuff, they sent our bags back through the detector, and they were also wiping it down, I guess checking for bomb residue or something. And then they had us wait some more, and they had more people come to question us, and this questioning was a little bit more in-depth, asking us separately, of course, but after we talked to each other, they asked similar questions about our religious affiliation. Were we Muslim? Were we Sunni? Were we Shia? Had we made Hajj? Why hadn't we made Hajj? Do we have a problem with the Saudis? Do we plan to go to Masjid al-Aqsa? After that, and I'm sure Daruba can probably add some stuff, but after that, they sent us back to wait, and we ended up waiting for a total of about 11 to 12 hours. And finally, after we had contacted our lawyers had called the embassy, they called some elected officials, Senator Lautenberg and another senator. Around the same time we began making those phone calls, shortly after that, we were released, and they photographed us. They took our biometric fingerprints and gave – and this part of it was very strange because from what we understood, this was the process they took tourists through. So they took us through the motions that would give the impression that we had been granted access, but then as soon as we did that – Another army official, a military official, came and told us to come with him. He let us know that we were being sent back to Jordan. One of the interesting things about the people in the facility there, the majority of them were all very young, and I would say clueless. They kind of had no idea about the history of the country, the perception of the outside world. I'll leave it at that. I think Daruba would have something to add.
I wanted to ask Daruba, is that your experience as well when you were separated from Najee?
Well, Najee pretty much summed it up. I feel kind of sad that the individual that was questioning me was young enough to be my grandson. And he really thought that he was a this really shrewd interrogator, and that was funny because he was going through all of the motions that that the police used to go through when I was growing up in the South Bronx, and they used to snatch us off the streets and take us to the police station and separate us and play the good cop, bad cop. It wasn't until we were interrogated by people who weren't with security. There's several layers of security that they seem to have at these checkpoints. This interrogator was around 30 years old. She began asking me very, very pointed political questions. She wanted to know why I hadn't made Hajj, and was I a practicing Muslim, and if I was a Sunni or a Shiite. She wanted to know whether I had political problems with the Saudis. She wanted to know who my friends were in Turkey who had invited me there to do a small lecture series there.
Was it in your passport that you had been to Turkey?
Yes, it was in my passport, but it's also they had our itineraries, you know, our tickets, our electronic tickets. So they had our itinerary when we were returning, when we were our flights and everything. And my flight, I'm leaving from here to Turkey for a week to speak in Istanbul and Ankara on the issue of political prisoners in the United States, specifically Imam Jamil Al-Amin, who is in prison in Colorado. For those of your listeners who are not familiar with Imam Jamil Al-Amin, that was the former Rap Brown, the chairperson of SNCC and former Black Panther. Imam Jamil Al-Amin, as some people may know, has been in prison for over a decade for purportedly killing a Georgia state policeman, a Georgia policeman. And his case is very prominent in Turkey. Young Muslims in Turkey are very interested how Islamophobia in the United States is manifesting itself. And the recent murder of Imam Al-Lukman in Detroit and the hysteria that was put out, the false stories that were put out by the FBI, are all indicative and reflect the strategies of the counterintelligence program that was used against the Black Panther Party. You see, the thing is that when we look at these cases, when we look at how this imam was murdered by the FBI, by the Joint Terrorist Task Force, when we look at how he was murdered and the pretext, you know, the criminalization of this imam, the criminal pretext, the police claimed that they were serving criminal warrants on this imam for tampering with automobile registration, possession of a weapon as a former convict, and all of these things. And they painted this picture of this criminal who was in the community. But the odd part about that whole incident is that the FBI briefed Muslim imams in the area after, it's unclear whether it was after or immediately before or simultaneous with the raid on the imams on the warehouse that the Muslims had there where they distributed food and other services to the community. But they came to arrest an imam with an attack dog. And we well know from Abu Ghraib and from other well-documented accounts of torture of Muslims in Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan and in various black sites that the United States has used dogs to terrorize and torture Muslims. And so accounts of this imam's murder indicated that he after everyone was taken into custody, that the police let the dogs loose on the imam, and the imam shot the dog. And he himself was shot approximately 18 to 20 times. And so the provocation of bringing a dog to arrest an imam for purportedly criminal charges is absurd. There was no need for that. And so it smacks of the same type of procedures that they use that the FBI and the local police use when they murdered Fred Hampton. If you recall, in the Fred Hampton case, the police put out the false story that they went to serve a warrant for illegal arms, that there was a criminal warrant out for the arrest of Fred Hampton for possession of weapons, and that when they got to the Panther's house and knocked on the door, they were met with gunfire from inside, and they returned the gunfire, and Fred Hampton was killed in the ensuing gun battle. The Panthers, however, had managed to secure the area, secure the house where Fred was killed, and they brought the community and the press in to see that no one inside of the house had fired any weapons. All of the bullets were coming inside, and they were all focused on the area where Fred Hampton was sleeping. And I just want to say that this issue of racial profiling by the Israeli government is nothing new. It's an ongoing policy of the Israeli state to discriminate against people of color. And even this even occurs within Israel when it comes to the European Ashkenazi Jewish elite who are in control of the state, and the few Jewish citizens who are of African or Sephardic ancestry. So the Jews of color, even inside of the Jewish state, are discriminated against.
You're listening to the voice of Daruba bin Wahad, who is speaking from a hotel in Jordan after being detained and then denied entry into Palestine by Israeli authorities. Bin Wahad is a former political prisoner in the U.S. who was charged in 1971 with the murder of two police officers, but was vindicated 19 years later when a judge ruled that the FBI had fabricated evidence in order to frame Bin Wahad of a crime he didn't commit. Now, on his way to a conference on political prisoners convened by the Palestinian Authority in the city of Jericho, Bin Wahad feels that he was racially profiled, along with his traveling companion, the only two African Americans on a busload of white tourists. I asked Bin Wahad's traveling companion, independent journalist Naji Mujahid, about the special treatment that the two men received at the hands of the Israeli authorities. He said that throughout the 11 hours of interrogation and searches, the Israeli soldiers kept assuring them that this was all normal procedure. This next segment begins with Naji Mujahid speaking. Then Daruba bin Wahad chimes in soon after.
We spoke with a local Palestinian there, and he told us that that was typical of them to do to people who were coming from outside of the region, outside of the country, to discourage people from visiting to see what was going on. And one thing that was interesting from some of the questioning I received from the initial security person, you know, he asked me, why did I want to come to Israel? And I said, well, I don't want to go to Israel. I want to go to Palestine. I want to go to Jericho.
He said, Jericho is Israel.
Yeah, essentially that's what he said. And then when I insisted upon not wanting to go to Israel and wanting to go to Palestine, he told me that maybe I had come the wrong way.
Yes, they told me that the young one, I mean, this is what was so pathetic. The first one, like I said, he was young enough to be my grandson. And he said the exact same thing. He said, well, maybe you're going in the wrong direction. Maybe you're going the wrong place. He says, because Jericho is in Israel, and so maybe you're going to the wrong place. I said, well, I doubt seriously that I got on a plane and flew 10,000 miles across the Atlantic Ocean and halfway and across Europe to the Middle East, only to find that I'm going to the wrong place, you know. And so, I mean, that was quite absurd. But this is again. Only highlights the fact that the people that serve the Israeli state are totally and completely oblivious, if not brainwashed, into the facts of how the world perceives the state of Israel. It's as if the state of Israel and its citizens are in a what would you call that, suspended animation. It's as if they're in another world. And it's really sad because, you know, whenever you proposition the destiny of an entire generation based on a lie, the consequences of that become apparent. This was the case with South Africa. Once South Africa had to be forced to realize that it had no support except, I mean, you know, we know that throughout the apartheid era, that the United States supported the racist regime in South Africa until it was untenable. So that support was untenable. And that was only immediately before the compromise that was reached between finance, capital, and ANC.
It's interesting that you bring in South Africa, because when I was there in 1997, I found the same type of thing that you're talking about, where young white people were waking up to the fact that they had been brainwashed their entire lives up until the end of apartheid in 94.
And we can see this beginning. The cracks in the settler state mentality are beginning to show with the increase of the anti-war movement inside of Israel, the increasing number of young Israelis who refuse to serve in the IDF or in the occupied territories, and the number of young Israelis who are leaving the country in order to avoid military service. But I might point out, and I should point out, that because Israel is a European settler state, it enjoys a certain amount of support from former colonial powers who find Israeli military power to their benefit, to their economic and geopolitical benefit. And the United States is no different, European allies in this respect. This money that goes to subsidize Israel could very well has been spent on education, improving our own urban infrastructures, in improving our society. Instead, they go to maintain a European garrison state in the middle of the Middle East, and this garrison state has been the cause and the center of conflict since the end of World War II. And it may very well be the spark that starts World War III. It's pathetic, especially coming from the United States, to see this going on and then realize that as an African American, black leaders in the United States, black political leaders, elected officials, have consistently voted in support of the state of Israel. They go on jaunts to Israel. They travel on tours to Israel. The National Basketball Association has a relationship with the Israeli Professional Sports Association to play for basketball teams, American basketball teams, to play Israeli teams in various matches. And this is ironic because we know that 85% of the NBA is black. And if they've tried to get into the to Israel other than as a basketball player, they probably would be stopped at the border just like me. And, I mean, we black leaders are silent on this. I mean, they're totally, completely silent. Now, these are the same individuals who have voted to extend the Patriot Act, to extend the provisions that make charitable work by Muslims, that make it a crime for Muslims to carry out charitable work in around the world. We are being told that, you know, that to have sympathy and empathy for the poor, for the disenfranchised, for victims of war, is somehow supporting terrorism. It's a sobering thought to realize that the United States and its government and its people are contributing to the murder and the terror and the oppression of an entire people and the theft of their lands, and they're doing it just as oblivious as the youth in Israel are oblivious to the reality of what they're doing. We had the Goldstone Report condemned by the United States Congress and House. Many black elected representatives voted to condemn the Goldstone Report. They said it was prejudicial against the state of Israel. And that was not the case. If anyone read the Goldstone Report, they would see that Goldstone attempted to try to balance out equally the condemnation of Hamas and the Israeli state. But of course, that's impossible because the proportion of violence visited on the Palestinians versus the proportion of violence visited on the Israelis was completely out of any type of symmetrical relationship. My point is that clearly it's only going to be world popular opinion that will see that there is a viable Palestinian state, that the Palestinians will have exercise the right to self-determination, and that the racist settler state of Israel will be dismantled, just as it was with the apartheid. And I just wanted to end this by saying that one of the things that I've learned from living in Africa for the past 17 years was that when apartheid fell, the major beneficiaries of the dissolution of apartheid wasn't the African majority. It was the white minority business class. The white businessmen in South Africa benefited the most from the dismantling of apartheid. They were able to then expand their corporate empires, and today we see the results of that in South Africa, the increasing violence that's happening in the country, the restless nature of the townships. The ANC, which started out as a government of reconciliation, has failed miserably in repatriating the land to the African majority. The white settlers in South Africa still own and still maintain the best land in the country. The ANC has only repatriated approximately 12% or 15% of the land that they said they would repatriate, and they've been in power now for, what is it, 12 years or something?
The voice of Daruba bin Wahad, recorded on November 25, 2009, just after he was denied entry into the Palestinian territories, where he was scheduled to speak at a Palestinian conference on political prisoners. Bin Wahad was imprisoned for 19 years in the U.S. from 1971 to 1990, charged with a crime he did not commit. He was eventually vindicated and released when a judge found that the FBI had fabricated evidence in his case. Bin Wahad then went to live in Africa for 17 years. He spoke to KABU Radio from a hotel room in Jordan, just across the border from the conference where he was scheduled to speak. Bin Wahad and another African-American on the trip, Naji Mujahid from Washington, D.C., were singled out and targeted for interrogation as the only people of color on the tourist bus they were traveling on. Again, Daruba bin Wahad.
We really understand how things have evolved. Today, we have more elected officials than we've ever had. There are thousands of black elected officials in the United States. And yet black America is in a worse position, progressively worse position than it was 25 years ago. So just having black faces in high places, just having African Americans in positions of administrative or elected posts, doesn't change the paradigm of white supremacy and the underlying ideology of white supremacy and white skin privilege that undergirds the republic and the state. And I think that when people fail to realize that when we look at legislation like the Patriot Act, and we try to look at it in isolation and say that it's merely a response to terrorist attacks of 9/11, we're really missing the boat, because the Patriot Act has a long history that stretches all the way back to the House on Un-American Activities. It stretches all the way back to the Omnibus Crime and Safe Streets Act that Nixon used to launch the war on drugs and the war in the African community and militarize the police. The militarization of the police in the United States has begun in the 1960s, and it was made complete in 2001 after the terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center. So we really, the average American doesn't fully appreciate what the Patriot Act really, really means in terms of their democratic freedoms, in terms of their abilities to bring about progressive change in this country. And they don't really appreciate that what we have today is a national security state that perceives all of its citizens as potential subversives, that sees all of its people as potential terrorists. And a country and a nation and a government that perceives its own citizens, that presumes its own citizens to be terrorists, is a nation and a country that cannot be said to be democratic in any with any stretch of the imagination. The type of political exercises that go on when we elect elected officials and we have millionaires running for office, and you have to be a millionaire in order to run for office nowadays, or you have to have a whole bunch of millionaires supporting you, tells you that we are dealing with an oligarchy that just employs the facade of democracy in order to rationalize and justify its hold on power.
Another parallel could be drawn with what you mentioned about the cynical and paranoid view that the government has of its people. And our government, speaking of the United States government, is based largely upon the ideals developed in the Roman Empire, of the Republic and democracy and so forth. We know that the Roman Empire carried that same kind of view upon its people, that the mob had to be controlled and entertained and distracted, while the aristocrats and the elite carried out the official business.
And I'm sure there are parallels between that and the paranoid state of Israel that has denied the two of you entry simply because you're black Muslims from the U.S. with strongly held political beliefs.
Well, you see, that's the whole thing. if Israel was a true democracy, and if its found if its foundation was firmly rooted in the rights of all of its citizens, and if it was really a nation that respected international law, then the conference that was held in Jericho around political political detainees in Israel would have been an open forum. There would be no reason to suppress or sabotage such a conference, because such a debate would be very, very important to the Israeli people and help them formulate opinions that could translate into a coherent policy of the Israeli state. But it's clear that what the Israelis fear the most is the education of their own people. They fear ideas. And in the final analysis, the struggle for the freedom of the Palestinian people, the struggles of the people in the Middle East for a better life, is a struggle of ideas.
I'm speaking this hour with Daruba bin Wahad and Naji Mujahid, who were denied entry into Jericho by Israeli authorities this week. Stay tuned for the second half of this conversation, in which we address the European genocide of Jews during World War II, the colonization of the Americas, and the establishment of Arabic despot regimes and the State of Israel by European colonial powers. We now go to Palestinian rap group Dam for their classic 2000 hit, Minarhabi, which translated from Arabic means, "Who's the terrorist?"
مين إرهابي؟ أنا إرهابي؟ كيف إرهابي وأنا عايش ببلادي؟ مين إرهابي؟ أنت إرهابي؟ ماكلني وأنا عايش ببلادي؟ قتلني زي ما قتلت إجدادي؟ أجل القانون على الفاضي ما أنت يا عدو بتلعب دور الشاهد المحامي والقاضي علي قاضي نهايتي بادي حلمك انقل فوق ما إحنا آلية حلمك لآلية تصير بالمقابر أكترية ديمقراطية؟ والله إنكم ناسية من كثر ما اغتصبتوا النفس العربية هبلت ولدت ولد اسمه عملية انفجارية وهنا ديتنا ارهابية يعني ضربني وبكيت سبعتني واشتكيت لما ذكرتك انك بدين نطيت وحكيت ما انتو بتخلوا ولاد صغار يرموا حجار ما لهمش اهل يدبوهم بالدار ايش كنو نسيت انو استحق ضب الاهل تحت الحجار وقلق لما وجع الفار بتناديني ارهابي مين ارهابي انا ارهابي كيف ارهابي وانا عايش في بلادي مين ارهابي انت ارهابي ماكلني وانا عايش في بلادي ليش ارهابي عشان دمي مش هادي حامي عشان رافع راسي وارض بلادي قتلوا حبايبي انا لحالي اهلي تشردوا حضلي انادي انا مش ضد السلام السلام ضدي علي بده يدي تراثي بده يمحي واللي بيحكي كلمة بشد ورا همة بيكون زلمة تعملوا منه رمة ومين انتو لسه امتى خبرتو اتصلوا عداش قتلتو وقداش قدمتو امياتنا بيبكوا ابياتنا بيشكوا اراضينا بيخطفوا انا بقولكم مين انتو انتو خبرتو بدلا احنا كبرنا فقر مين كبر فواسع ومين كبر فجحر صار في داعي عملتو منه اجرامي وانت يا ارهابي بتناديني ارهابي
مين ارهابي انا ارهابي كيف ارهابي وانا عايش ببلادي مين ارهابي انت ارهابي ماكلني وانا عايش ببلادي امتى ببطل ارهابي لما تضربني كف وقتي خدي تاني كيف تتوقع مني اشكر لاذاني تعرف ايش انت قولي كيف دخياني راكع ركبي وايدي مربطات عيون بالارض وجثث مزتتات بيوت مهدوم عائلات مشردات اطفال يتيمه حريه بكلبشات انت امر انت قتل احنا بنقبر ما علينا بنصبر وجعنا بنستر اهم شيء انك تحس بامان اتريح وسيب لنا الالام ما هو دمنا دم كلاب حتى لا لما الكلب يموت في الرفق بالحيوان يعني دمنا ارخص من دم الكلاب لا دمي غالي روح ادافع حالي لو تناديني ارهابي
مين ارهابي مين ارهابي مين ارهابي مين ارهابي مين ارهابي مين ارهابي مين ارهابي انت ارهابي
One of the problems here is that the discussion around all of this has to do with the legality of the Israeli state. The reason why the peace, so-called peace process is only talked about in terms of a two-state solution is to legitimize a historical theft, to legitimize the theft of the Palestinian people's land. And to make it legitimate in the world, you have to recognize it as a legal entity. And of course, this is very difficult and it's very problematical because the majority of regimes in the region are themselves illegal, have been established by outside forces.
The voice of Daruba bin Wahad, detained along with independent journalist Naji Mujahid by Israeli authorities at the border between Jordan and the Israeli-occupied Palestinian West Bank.
If we look at Kuwait, Kuwait was carved out of Iraq by the French and the British after World War I. If we look at the United Arab Emirates, if we look at Jordan, it's a country I'm in right now. All of these countries were a product of the dissolution and the dismemberment of the Ottoman Turk Empire. This dismemberment was also a strategy of the British. We know about the Balfour Agreement with Theodore Herzl and the Zionist movement in order to secure this land that became strategically important to the West as the West industrialized. And we know how the Saudi state and the original potentate of Saudi Arabia, King Saud, was supported by the British and the Americans. So we know that the very Arab regimes that rely on oil wealth are the same Arab regimes that were installed, the families and were installed by British and French imperialism. And the countries that, and these countries have huge migrant populations, migrant working populations. They are artificial entities themselves. So it's very difficult in this region to sort all of this out with any degree of justice and equality, because the United States and the Europeans are so invested in turmoil and maintaining a certain level of turmoil and hostility and war in this region that they will not support any genuine peace process. How long have we been talking about Israeli-Palestinian settlement and peace? How many summits have Palestinian leaders went to and shook hands and photo ops with everyone from Menachem Begin to Benjamin Netanyahu? How many? And where has it gotten the Palestinian people? How has it changed the paradigm in the Middle East? We need to really fully appreciate that the West and the United States do not have a vested interest in the self-determination, in developing self-determination for the Arab people in this region or the state of or the Palestinians. What we're looking at today is an attempt by the West to make a lie into the truth and to make the truth a lie and legalize it. And this is why this situation is intractable. This is why the situation cannot stand. And the only way we could resolve the situation peacefully is if well-meaning people in the world begin a serious boycott of the European settler state of Israel and bring about its democratization and hopefully create an entity in the region in which the Palestinians will enjoy true self-determination and the idea and the notion of European settlerism is put to rest forever.
Now, some moderate Zionists like J Street would bring up the points that you made about the Arab regimes and say, well, why single out Israel? Why not boycott these other regimes, which are also unfair?
I mean, that's a ridiculous argument. First of all, the Europeans on the land of Palestine have no relationship whatsoever to the region. The people that's there, despots and all, are from there. The Ashkenazi Jews from Europe, Eastern Europe, and from Central Asia, these people have no relationship whatsoever, either in terms of blood lineage, in terms of religion, in terms of language, and in terms of race to that area. None whatsoever. None. The state of Israel is propositioned on a lie, and that lie is that they are the original Jews, and that is their land, and that's a lie. And it can be, and every Israeli professor of history and archaeology know that that's a lie. They know it's a lie. You had one professor, I forgot his name, who wrote a book on this. and he was ostracized by Jewish academia in Israel. This is a conspiracy on the part of Israeli academia to perpetuate the notion that Europeans are indigenously tied to that land. That's a lie. You see, Zionism is its own worst enemy, because it's perpetrating a lie that's devouring their own children. They're eating themselves alive. You cannot proposition the freedom of a few people based on the oppression and the military domination of a majority population. That's not freedom. A garrison state is not a free state. It's not a democratic entity. It's impossible to exercise democratic freedoms and rights in a garrison state. In a state where the military and the police are the social engineers and the primary architects of power and policy.
So you're saying that Israel's attempt to have the Palestinians recognize Israel as a Jewish state is actually an attempt to deny history.
Yeah, it's an attempt to legalize the theft of a people's land and to make it into a legal entity and to deny the reality in the history of the Palestinian people, of course. I mean, everyone knows the origins of Zionism. Everyone knows the origin of 95% of the people that's living in what's called the State of Israel. They come from Europe. They are the victims of white supremacy in Europe. They are the victims of anti-Semitism in Europe. They're not the victims of Arab anti-Semitism. How can an Arab be anti-Semitic? He is Semitic. Any Israeli, this is the reason why Netanyahu could stand up in the United Nations and connect the struggle against the Palestinians, the occupation of Palestine, to the Nazi Holocaust. What do the Palestinian people have to do with the white supremacist Nazi ideology? What? They did not perpetrate Treblinka and Dachau. They were not the ones that created industrial murder on an industrial scale. It was the Germans. It was the Teutons. It was a European race that did that. And they did it to other Europeans. In fact, the whole entire notion on the word Holocaust and the word genocide has been appropriated precisely to give the idea and the notion that genocide is a universal horror, that all people practice genocide in some shape or form, okay? When in fact, we are talking about a genocide that was committed by Europeans on other Europeans. If we want to talk about genocide in its totality, we could talk about Belgium and the murder of millions and millions of Africans. We could talk about the slave trade. But whenever black people talk about genocide, liberal Jews in America resent the use of the term. So what we need to understand is that any criticism of the State of Israel is treated as a denial of their right to exist as human beings on this planet. And it's not. It's a denial of their right to usurp another people's land based on the injustice that was done to them by other Europeans. We need to fully appreciate that what we're talking about here is the perpetuation of a myth. And that myth is that the Europeans who are now settlers in this area have somehow a relationship and a right to this land. It's the same thing that the Boers said when they took South Africa, that they came into an empty land and there was no one there. Haven't we heard the Jews say the same thing in Israel? That it was an empty land for landless people? That they came in and they made the desert bloom and all of this stuff? Sure they made the desert bloom. They appropriated almost 80% of all of the water that comes through the region. It's diverted and used for settlements and the Jewish state, whereas the indigenous population has to be content with what remains. So the entire paradigm of power in the region is skewed by white supremacy. It's skewed by a European settler state that has a vested interest in perpetuating the lie and the notion that they somehow have a right to this land. And that notion and that lie is in the interest of the West, because the West, like America, are white supremacist states. The United States itself was a former settler state. Every state in South America began as a European settler state.
You're listening to the voice of Black Panther leader and political prisoner, Daruba Bin-Wahad.
So what do we say about this? How do we deal with the issues of indigenous peoples whose lands have been taken and appropriated, whether it was in South America, Central America, North America, or the Middle East? So this issue of legalizing and making right out of might is a moral outrage. And people, and any justice-loving people should be outraged by such a thing. But they're not. They're duped into believing that somehow the Israelis are surrounded by enemies who hate them, and they're a resourceful people, and they're a democratic people, and that they have a right to live in safe and secure borders. What right does a settler have to take another people's land and then say that they have a right to be secure in their settlement? What right?
Well, wouldn't that then open the doors if U.S. citizens recognized Israel as a settler state? Wouldn't that then open the doors for the U.S. to be recognized as a settler state and have to pay reparations to Native Americans and Africans for slavery?
No, what it would open the door for is for the indigenous rights of Native Americans or Native people in North America and in South America to be able to at least reclaim some of their land and some of their rights. Or, given the fact that the United States is a built-up infrastructure, is a nation state that is very well developed, and the land has been basically transformed, and the Indians have been wiped out, basically, how many Native people are left in the United States? How many pure-blooded Native people are left in the United States? It's a handful. You could not possibly return the whole continent to a people that don't even exist anymore. But you can compensate the people that do exist now in a way that they can determine their own destiny within the context of where they are at now, within the context of the paradigms that we have now. There is no democracy in the United States. In the United States, we know that the electoral system is a system of winner take all. So because there's no democracy in the United States, there's no possibility to change the Constitution to ensure that people, the indigenous people, and the people who were historically used to build up the American Republic are somehow compensated and have certain rights and privileges. Every right that a black person has in the United States is subject to legal change, to legal redress, to legal reform. Black people in the United States doesn't have one right that they can enjoy without it being subject to the white majority's whim, will, or white skin privilege. Not one right. Well, all I'm simply saying is we can't make an analogy between a minority of Europeans who enjoy military strength and might because of its support from the West, because of its support by another white supremacist nation. America is a racist nation. It began as a racist nation. It still is a racist nation. And the only reason it has a black president is because, as an empire, it has to make certain strategic and tactical moves in order to survive, and there is not one white man in the world who could sit up in that White House and make these moves and the world would believe them. They're tired of white supremacy. The world is tired of the George Bushes and the Ronald Reagans. That's why you have an Obama in the White House. And that's why Obama could carry out almost the same policies as George Bush and still enjoy global popularity. He could send more troops to Afghanistan. His ratings don't drop. Why? Because the people of the world want to believe that the United States is a democracy in which all people are equal. People want to believe that the United States is a symbol of justice and a symbol of humanity. People want to believe that. More people want to come to the United States than you could imagine. Despite of what I'm saying, people want to believe that. Why do they want to believe that? We need to ask ourselves, why do they want to believe that? Because we sold them this dream. We sold them this idea that Anybody could be anything they want in the United States. But the fact of the matter is, every right that people enjoy today, every civil right, every human right that people enjoy today has come as a result of the struggle of African people in this country for their humanity. Every right. Go back and look in the history books. Go through the whole history of this country, and you see that the major defining moments in American history has been the struggle over slavery, civil rights, human rights, emancipation, voting rights. All of these struggles were led by people of African ancestry. So my point here is that people believed in the dream of freedom, of equality, of peace, and living in harmony with their neighbors. People want to do that, but because of the interests of empire, because of the interests of elites and oligarchies and nation states, these dreams are often thwarted, distorted, and turned in on themselves. So we have the contradiction of people wanting, fleeing poverty in the former colonial world, fleeing to the United States for an opportunity to raise their families and get a job. Why do they have to go to the center of the empire in order to do good? Because their own country has been ravaged and exploited by these same superpowers. And it's just like in the days of Rome. Everybody wanted to go to Rome because Rome was where all the money was at. Rome was where all the fun was at. Rome was where all the possibility for wealth resided. So everybody wanted to go to the center of the empire. And it's no different today. Poor people, people who can't get jobs, people whose families can't get food, all want a better life. And so what I'm trying to say here is that we should not underestimate the power of the masses of people to bring about historic change. Because everyone wants to live a better life.
You're listening to Daruba bin Wahad speaking from his hotel in Jordan after being denied entry into Palestine by Israeli border authorities. Bin Wahad was a political prisoner in the U.S. for 19 years, 7 of those years in solitary confinement. In 1990, he was cleared of all charges when a New York judge found that U.S. federal agents had fabricated evidence against him as part of the Counterintelligence Program, or COINTELPRO, which was created by the U.S. government to systematically attack and destroy movements for Black, Latino, and Native American liberation. Again, Daruba bin Wahad.
So we are played into the idiotic notion that somehow that people hate America because Americans have freedoms that they don't have. When the fact is, it's the complete opposite. People love America and want to be in America because of the ideas that America has spread around the world about freedom, justice, and equality. That's what they really want. What they hate is U.S. foreign policy. What makes extremists is U.S. foreign policy. When people are ignorant, when they haven't got a grasp of their own history, when they fail to understand the history and the desires and the wants of other people, they become increasingly ignorant, and they are they become responsible for the wars that we have today. They're the ones that let these senators stand up, let these old men stand up and old women stand up in the Senate and send their children off to die for corporate interests. So my point is that when you try to make what is historically an injustice right, you can only do so by trying to bring about justice for those who have been historically wronged. And that's one of the reasons that truth and reconciliation in South Africa has failed. Because the people that perpetuated the terrorism on the African people, who murdered Stephen Biko, who imprisoned Nelson Mandela, who murdered an entire generation of Africans, have never been brought to justice. Never. They have never been brought to justice. And without justice, you can't have any peace. And South Africa will never have peace until there's justice.
Daruba bin Wahad, speaking to us from Jordan, where he is sitting in a hotel after having been denied entry into a conference in Jericho. I want to thank you so much for this conversation. It's been very engaging and I hope educational for our listeners. Again, I'm Jenka Soderberg. I've been speaking with Daruba Bin Wahad and Naji Mujahid.
You know, it's kind of hard being out of being in this country because every time something goes wrong, you're the first one they look at. Every time something bad happens, they bring out the usual suspects. Mm-hmm. They blame the Arab. Mm-hmm. Yeah, look. Jogging in the park, just handling our business. Mom goes off in the distance, what is this? It looks so suspicious, cause that's the city's only limit. They don't even have a friggin' witness, they don't need one. Wrongfully accused like Leslie Nielsen. A cop corners me and says, let's cut a deal, son. Said, okay, I'll name names and I'll start with the big gun. Bill Clinton, a terrorist who's bigger than Big Pun. He'll bomb anyone, women, kids, even Hillary. The media typed and judging us as guilty. Showing us as violent, irrational, and filthy. Cause stereotypes see what they wanna see. Reducing complexity to simplicity, can't you see? For presuming guilty, we gotta prove innocence. Our innocence, even with the lack of evidence. We're not terrorists anyway. Who bombed the Alfred Murray building in Oklahoma City? It was a honky called Timothy McVeigh. Yet again, they blamed us again and again. Here we go. What is the tale of the three Mohammeds? Just cause we're Arabic doesn't mean we're suspect. It's the tale of the three Mohammeds. Just cause of politics doesn't mean we're suspect. It's the tale of the three Mohammeds. Just cause we're immigrants doesn't mean we're suspect. It's the tale, it's the tale, it's the tale of the three Mohammeds. Don't forget where you're coming from. Last night I watched the news on Channel 4. After about 10 minutes I stuck my head out the door. I'm mad as hell and I'm not gonna take it anymore. Cause they always portraying Arabians as shady. Up to no good like Michael Milliken's new. Well, forget it, it ain't all that it's cracked up to be. That's the rule assigned to me, cause I'm wanna be. You thought ignorance would end with a century. Turned on the news and found out that was a lie. Did they say so explicitly? No! Why? See it in action with the action news. I hear it every day when I try to schmooze. But people in the street or up in the store, when they talk, they all sound like Channel 4. Yo, like Channel 4. Or Fox, CNN, too. CBS, here we go. It's the tale of the three Mohammeds. Just cause we're Arabic doesn't mean we're suspect. It's the tale of the three Mohammeds. Just cause of politics doesn't mean we're suspect. It's the tale of the three Mohammeds. Just cause we're immigrants doesn't mean we're suspect. It's the tale, it's the tale, it's the tale of the three Mohammeds.
What we trying to do here, man?
Taking us to jail and we don't even know why. I came here to work and I get followed by the FBI. Media reports that politicians distorted. The public supports it, but it's us getting deported. I don't recall voting to be stereotyped by you. Secret evidence will break us like kung fu. A chilling effect, but you can chill on these. Secret Syrian, Palestinian, Egyptian, Lebanese, Iraqi, Yemeni, Jordanian. But guess what? We're all the same nation. But we're all out of at the heart. So don't come hating us from the